Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Bills ready to trade wide receiver Zay Jones to the Oakland Raiders for a fifth-round pick in 2021. That's according to ESPN. The trade not confirmed by either the Bills or the Raiders just yet, but it should be later today. Zay Jones, Bills second-round pick in 2017 out of East Carolina, had a huge college career. He was the leading receiver for the Bills last year, but failed to make an impact so far this year. Seven catches on 69 yards. Duke Williams' emergence last Sunday in the game against Tennessee, obviously a factor. Raiders GM Mike Mayock was a fan of Zay Jones coming out of East Carolina. That plays into the trade as well. The Bills have added to their practice squad, signing defensive end Wyatt Ray to fill a vacant spot they had there. Titans moving on from kicker Cairo Santos after his disastrous outing against the Bills. Missed four field goals in Tennessee's 14-7 loss to the Bills. Apparently more than enough for them to make a move. The expected replacement is going to be former Bears kicker Cody Parkey, the author of the double doink that knocked Chicago out of last year's playoffs. Giants running back Saquon Barkley unlikely to play Thursday night against New England despite returning to practice late last week. The Giants also could be without tight end Evan Engram in that game as well. Patriots released veteran tight end Benjamin Watson yesterday. His roster exemption expired 4 p.m. yesterday, and they cut him. And the 49ers could be without a key piece of their offensive attack for a long time. The report is that the Niners fullback Kyle Juszczyk suffered an MCL injury during San Francisco's romp over the Cleveland Browns last night. Juszczyk will undergo an MRI exam today to determine the severity of the injury. Sabres lost last night. They came back from behind, though. Lost 4-3 in overtime to Columbus. Victor Olofsson tied the game late. Linus Ullmark with 40 saves to keep the Sabres in the game. They're practicing today, home tomorrow night against the Montreal Canadiens. Start of a three-game homestand at KeyBank Center for the Buffalo Sabres. And the baseball schedule down to one game tonight. It is game four of the American League Division Series. Houston at Tampa Bay. The Astros are up 2-1 in that series. And that's the update from our Seneca studio in Orchard Park, John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Joined on the line by our new Tuesday buddy. He is a host at NFL Network, co-host of Good Morning Football. Happy to have him on. Kyle Brandt joins us. Kyle, John Murphy and Steve here in Buffalo. Thank you very much for joining us.
Murph, Steve, glad to be here. I told you guys the Titans weren't going to be a problem. Never a worry in that one.
We had a little bit of a worry.
Right, yeah. I just hope we win the bye week. That's all.
Listen, Steve. It's not just the bye week. The bye week is fine. I'm starting to look at this Bills schedule, and far be it for me to get ahead of myself with this team, but I know the record is 4-1, and I see Dolphins twice. I see a woe-be-gone Redskins team. I saw a Broncos team that's really struggling. This looks pretty good. If you're already at 4-1, are we already thinking like, 9 wins, 10 wins. I'm going to get way ahead of myself. I think they're ready. I mean, this schedule is beautiful. I don't even mind the Steelers right now or the Ravens. And you got the Jets again. This thing is pretty tasty, guys. I mean it.
Kyle, even the short-term schedule, 3 straight home games coming up for the Bills. Dolphins, Eagles, Redskins, 2 of those teams are winless. I mean, you can do some damage here the next 3 weeks for the Bills.
No, it's fantastic. And then you kidding me? You get to go on. You go to the 3-game homestead in 2 very winnable games, and who knows what happens against Philly. And then you got to go to the Browns. Did you see that team last night? I mean, any kind of defense, any kind of pressure, their line is just a mess. Like, that's a very winnable game. I'm looking at these 2019 Bills as a 10-win team. I really mean that. It's intoxicating to look at the schedule right now with the way they're playing.
Yeah, I noticed you mentioned the last night's game and something coming out of it. Richard Sherman was a little critical of the Browns quarterback, Baker Mayfield, about not shaking hands pregame. I did some of that when I was playing. I mean, I was a team captain. I went out and shook a lot of hands at the middle of the field. What's your take on, you know, game day etiquette at the center of the field?
Well, there's so many layers to this take because you have two of the great personalities in Sherman and Baker. But, Steve, let me throw it back to you first. Like you mentioned, I know you're a modest guy, but you were a captain for a long time on fantastic Bills teams. Take us through it. What is the ritual like? You walk out there to center field. Do you shake everybody's hand? Did you back in the day? Like, take us through the motions of this thing.
I think you got to greet every guy that they brought out there. And I think because you're a team captain, you were supposed to be a level above, you know, regular guy. You weren't supposed to be one of those guys that, you know, pounded his chest and got in their face and screamed at him at the coin toss. You were supposed to have a little level head. You were a leader of the team. You wanted to represent. And by doing so, you felt like you needed to show some respect to those guys, right? Because you were smart enough to know that they're on scholarship too.
It's a tricky thing because Sherman, they have this incredible win and they just beat the hell out of the Browns. Sherman talks to Mike Silver from NFL.com and goes on this long Richard Sherman rant, which we love, about Baker refused to shake his hand and how dare he hasn't proved anything in this league and Mahomes would never do that. I found myself wondering, now this was on Monday Night Football. There's about 500 cameras around. It's the center field coin toss handshake. Would there not be video of maybe Richard Sherman getting snubbed by Baker Mayfield? There sure enough is video out there. You don't have to go far in Twitter to find it. In fact, you're showing it to your viewers right now. I'm not the detective on this thing, but it doesn't appear to be a slight. I don't see it if it's there. We can dissect it a million times, six ways to Sunday if we want. But my point on this, guys, is, you know, if Richard Sherman has a problem with Baker Mayfield violating NFL etiquette, as he put it, well, then Richard Sherman would have really hated young Richard Sherman, because this is the guy. Let's not mess around with this. This is the guy, when he was young, before he had accomplished a ton in this league, had a big moment when he got in Tom Brady's face after a game, and it turned into this whole "you mad bro" Twitter thing. This is a guy, Richard Sherman, and God love him, it's his right. I loved it when, at the time, after his biggest moment, after his team's biggest win against San Francisco, is on national television, and his first words are, "I am the best corner in the game," and then turned and absolutely trashed Michael Crabtree. Right. So does that not violate NFL etiquette? You want to do that, that's fine. And he's got national commercials and huge contracts because of it. But I think a young Richard Sherman would have maybe looked at a young Baker Mayfield a lot differently.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. I mean, and that's the age we live in. Nothing you do on the football field goes unviewed for eternity, really, or at least the next.
Yeah, and especially the coin toss handshake, Steve. I don't know if Baker Mayfield did this. I don't know if Richard Sherman made it up. Or, again, to your point, sometimes when these handshakes are going on and there's 8 to 10 guys out it gets a little messy. I kind of point at you. I handshake you. It's very rushed. Maybe there was a misinterpretation from Sherman, because I can't see Baker Mayfield, guys, mind you, in college. What really set him off, never mind the flag planting with Ohio State and Oklahoma, he had a day against Kansas where he grabbed his crotch on the sideline. He had to apologize for it. It was this whole thing. What set him off that day against Kansas was that the Jayhawks refused to shake his hand at the coin toss.
That's exactly right.
So you would think, if anything was a sin that Baker Mayfield wouldn't commit, it would be the handshake snub. And watching the video, I don't think he did commit that sin.
And so it could be.
Now we got handshake game.
Right. It could be that Richard Sherman, it wasn't as good a handshake or as big of an acknowledgement as he wanted, and he projected all this onto Baker Mayfield just because he was in a game state. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, now we're splitting hairs about, was it a handshake hug?
Right.
I don't even know what it was. But I think, to your point, I think there's a lot of people who are looking to hate Baker Mayfield. He's really off-putting if you don't like that kind of thing. I would just think, if anybody could relate to a young, fiery, charismatic player who broke some etiquette rules, it might be Richard Sherman. I guess not.
We're with Kyle Brandt, NFL Network. Let's talk about the other non-football takeaway from last night's convincing San Francisco win. Nick Bosa planting the flag. What did you make of that? I loved it. I thought it was hilarious and apropos. What did you think?
Absolutely incredible. You remember, you go back to that game a couple of years ago in the Horseshoe in Columbus. When Baker did the OU flag, the Buckeyes had left the field. Nick Bosa was on that team. He was in the locker room at the time, licking his wounds, removing the tape, doing whatever. It gets back to them later that, I don't know if you guys know this, but when you left the field, you know Baker Mayfield from OU? Well, he planted a flag in the middle of the stadium in the Horseshoe. So the fact that Nick Bosa admitted, "I've been waiting to do this for 2 years. I couldn't wait to get in the NFL so I could do this to Baker Mayfield," is awesome. This Nick Bosa has something to say. I know he's got thoughts on politics that some people like, some don't. I know he has thoughts on Baker Mayfield. He said during the game he was chanting Baker's name at him on the field, saying, "Come on, Baker, do better. We need a challenge." This guy is a revelation if you like good old-fashioned revenge, smack talk, and he's a hell of a player.
Yep. Yeah, he is. I got to ask you to get back to the Buffalo Bills. You said that you love the schedule, how it plays out. This is obviously a team at this point that's leaning on what is really, in this year's NFL, it's an elite defense. It's been my take a little earlier in the week that this team, the Bills, are going to go as far as their defense takes them. Do you ascribe to that? Do you agree with it, or do you think there's more to the offense than we've seen so far?
Well, it depends on how far they want to go. You know, right now we can look at the schedule and say, well, the Dolphins are terrible and this team's terrible. And that would be a real nice story if the Bills got to the playoffs and everything. And then what happens? They go one and done? Well, they saw that a couple of years ago.
Right.
This defense and the schedule right now is good enough that the Bills could win 10 games, get their wild card, and then show up to the playoffs and lose. If they want to win in the playoffs, guys, we've talked about it for a month now. Josh Allen's got to just play a little cleaner. It's
right.
Even the win in Buffalo, when he plays a pretty clean game, there's just that one interception where he hates throwing the ball away. He hates it. You can tell. I don't know about it for you guys, but I got a couple little kids at home, and we can have a nice family outing, and everyone gets along, and we do the pumpkin patch or the apple picking or whatever it is, and it's a great family day. And then as we're driving home, my five-year-old will say one little thing or throw one little fit to ruin a nice time. If we could eliminate that one moment from our family, it would just be a perfect Sunday. If we could eliminate the one irritating Josh Allen interception, then we can go places. But no, Steve, the defense can get them to the playoffs, but we got to put up some points once you get there.
That right. sounds like a daddy right. problem to me, Kyle. I don't know if that's your problem.
Oh, it's a huge
problem.
Daddy problem. Are you kidding me? And the apple picking is so expensive, I can't even afford it. It's nuts.
Come on up here in Niagara County. We got good, cheap apples. Kyle Brandt, NFL Network. What did you think of the emergence of Duke Williams from the CFL to the go-ahead touchdown for the Bills against Tennessee and last night's trade of Zay Jones? What do you make of all that?
Well, first of all, I'm in Westchester County, and the apples are ridiculous. The apple picking outing is about spending $75 to bring home $15 worth of apples.
Right.
You could have gone right down the street.
Right.
But in relation to your question, I love the Duke thing, and it says, look, who doesn't love a former Edmonton Eskimo? The idea that they could pull from him, and now you talked about it leading into, with your sports report, Murph. Now they're getting rid of Zay, the so-called high-priced talent and the big talent and the deep threat and everything. Who cares? We're in the middle of the season right now. I don't care if you're an Edmonton Eskimo or West Virginia Mountaineer, Alabama Crimson Tide. You got to have guys like this to make plays. And it's like we've seen it from him. We've seen it from Dawson Knox, my guy. The good teams don't just show up with their starters and say, this is who we're going to roll with. Players emerge. The Patriots do it every single year. There's some guy who comes out of the practice squad or undrafted who says, all of a sudden, they're in the Super Bowl making plays. You need the Duke Williams of the world to show up. You know what you're getting from Frank Gore. You know what you hope you get from Devin Singletary. The former Edmonton Eskimo or the current Dawson Knox, those are the guys who get you, again, from getting to the playoffs to maybe a win in the playoffs. I love it.
I know that you're busy on weekends. You got a family just like I do, and you like to, you know, you parachute in on all the games. You catch the highlights and all that. Did you see the atmosphere in Nissan Stadium in Nashville? And
it's hilarious.
Yeah,
hell
is.
Yes, I did.
It is.
And listen, it's one thing if the mafia goes to a game here at MetLife, the Jets, the Giants. Sure, it's not that long of a trip. Tennessee is a jump, guys. I mean, to go all the way down there and to get to Nashville and to take it over like that, you see the Bills running out of the tunnel, and it's not a bunch of Titans fans screaming at them and telling them to get out of here. It's Bills country. There's a woman holding a flag that says, you're in Bills country. They're 10 minutes from the Grand Ole Opry. They're nowhere close to Bills country.
Yeah.
And yet they took it over, and I have to imagine that the Bills fans did some of those peddling bachelor party things, the bars on wheels that they do, and they were at all those old honky-tonks where the draft was this past year. I think it was incredible. There's about five or six fan bases in the NFL who I think really travel. And when I see a Nashville, Tennessee stadium filled with Poyer jerseys and all Josh Allen jerseys, you know the Bills are one of them.
We're on the line with Kyle Brandt, NFL Network, co-host of Good Morning Football on the NFL Network. Let me move around the league a little bit, if I can, with you, Kyle, and talk about the Sunday night game, the Colts. We're both here fond of Frank Reich, as you might imagine, and I thought Frank was masterful in what he had planned and how his team ran the ball against Kansas City on Sunday night.
He's currently the most underrated coach out of all 32. What he's done is absolutely incredible since showing up there. And it's funny because every sports show, certainly ours, every single one that's on TV anywhere, anytime somebody really good loses all of a sudden like the Chiefs did, they just dust off the old question, was a blueprint revealed to beat the Chiefs? Was a blueprint? No, the blueprint is have Quentin Nelson, have the best offensive line that money can buy like the Colts do, and have a head coach that can will anybody to win at any time. If you have that, yes, you can beat the Chiefs. But this was a revelation because this was supposed to be the Colts show up, the Chiefs hang 40 points on them because the Indy defensive backs are out. And couldn't have gone differently because the Colts know how to run the ball, and Frank Reich can get them to run through a brick wall, as you know, Steve. And I would imagine on your team, Steve, the K-Gun teams going up and down the field with a no huddle, I bet that every other week there was some team or some broadcaster who said, well, the way you got to beat the Bills is you got to run the ball and keep that offense off the field. That doesn't always work. Everyone wants to do that, but you look up and you're down 17-0. That goes out the window.
Yeah, it worked once in Super Bowl 25 when Bill Belichick and yeah. Bill Parcells got it done. You're right, though. That it was the way to do it. And there's a number of games like this that really become interesting. And I got to ask you this. We know it's a quarterback league with Mahomes, with Drew Brees being in and out, and Teddy Bridgewater taking over. All these great quarterbacks that kind of drive the league. Is there any way that a running back like Christian McCaffrey can play well enough to win the MVP?
It's a great question. We've been talking about it all week. I think for a running back to do it right now, I think it would take two things. I think one, you got to make the playoffs. So the Carolina Panthers have to make the playoffs. We know that. You're not going to win the MVP if you go 8-8 or 7-9. But I think more importantly, you have to do something really special. You can't just have a great season and great highlights. The last time we saw it, for example, Adrian Peterson won the MVP. Adrian Peterson had a 2,000-yard rushing season less than a year after completely blowing his knee out. He had the story. He had the stats. He carried that team with a young Teddy Bridgewater to the playoffs. What Christian McCaffrey would have to do to beat out someone like Mahomes, who will come running, Russell Wilson, who's been unconscious, he'd have to do something special. He'd have to go 1,000 and 1,000. He'd have to rush for 2,000. You know, his all-purpose yards right now through 5 weeks, he's on a top five list with guys like OJ and Jim Brown, like rare air. So that's what I mean. The answer to the question, the short answer is yes. McCaffrey right now, if the Panthers didn't have him, they'd be an 0-5 team. And no one's playing better football. But for a running back in today's era, you got to give those voters, those writers, something really they can sink their teeth into more than stats. And McCaffrey, it'd have to be something astronomical, which he's capable of.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. It's got to be something nobody's done in 10 years with numbers. I mean, statistics you can sink your teeth into. I think he's got a chance at it, particularly after the game that Pat Mahomes had and all that stuff that can go wrong with our quarterback. But it's got to be something statistically, some statistical anomaly has to put him there, right?
It could be that, or you know what, Steve, next week Mahomes could come out and literally throw for 9 touchdowns in one game and be back. Mahomes can do anything.
You're right.
Ken, Kyle Brandt joins us. We're going around the NFL with Kyle Brandt of the NFL Network. The coaching ranks of the league down one Gruden after the firing of Jay Gruden. Your thoughts on that move? Who's the long-term solution for coaching Washington? And what do they do about their quarterback, Dwayne Haskins? Does he need to play right away?
It's wild. You know, it's big around here, and it's if I'm Jay Gruden, first of all, I'm so disappointed that you couldn't give me one more week. You couldn't fire me after the Dolphins game, because here's what's going to happen. You know they're going to win this weekend. They're going to beat the Dolphins, and it's going to seem, well, that fixed everything. And Gruden said, I could have beat the Dolphins. I don't care who they play quarterback. We've been really polarized in the morning on this about Haskins. You know, Nate Burleson and my cohort at the table says, put him in. Let him take his lumps. And I just say, I don't know. The team is really bad. The roster is not good. And if you're going to take this guy, and the Washington's been looking for a quarterback, I don't know, 20 years, even if you go right through RG3 and Cousins, they're looking for the fixed thing for decades. I don't see the rush. And if you're a young quarterback who's learning to drive, you don't want to learn to drive a car that's dragging the fender and has no rear view and barely starts. All that's going to do is get you wrapped around the phone pole. I would wait. I don't see that it's a lost season. I've seen guys come in and never be the same. You know, people want to point to Baker Mayfield last year that he was just thrown right in on a bad Browns team. Baker Mayfield had Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, David Njoku. These are blue-chip talent guys. I watched Washington, and I don't even know what Dwayne Haskins would have to work with. And the fact that Jay Gruden could have played him to maybe save his job, and he didn't, must tell you that maybe the guy's not ready. I actually like that they're taking cautiously.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think one of the things, you look back at RG3 when he was in Washington. He tried to play hurt, went through. What do you think, too, about there's not going to be any continuity? He can go in and play bad or good, and it won't matter because he's going to learn a new offense under a new head coach, under a new system next year, and he has to start from scratch again with maybe a better roster. It's almost a lose-lose at this point for Dwayne Haskins to me.
I know. And it's just been so messy. You know, they insert him in the middle of a game a couple of weeks ago. He doesn't look good. He throws three picks. And then there's like, all right, well, we're going to go with Haskins. And they say, well, you know, we're playing the Patriots. We can't go with him there. Then you're hiding him from certain opponents. You would play him against this team, but not. It seems like a total mess. When Jay Gruden was just saying, I want continuity. Clearly, he did not want Haskins, did not want to play Haskins, and that's probably why his key card doesn't work right now. I think, Steve, the best case is you take your sweet time, you take your lumps, you get a top five pick this year, you get somebody to pair him with, young offensive coach, you can get the most out of him, and I don't know, Dwayne Haskins, we'll see you in training camp. That's what I would do.
Which way does Washington go? Does Dan Snyder go to kind of rebuild what they have there either this year or in the offseason?
God only knows. You know, I'm hearing a lot of smoke about Mike Tomlin going to Washington. He was even asked about it today and said, listen, you know, the Steelers are going to play the Chargers. Tomlin said, I'm about to take a third string quarterback and go play a Hall of Fame quarterback. I'm not exactly thinking about that right now. Right. And you know how it is with Pittsburgh. They're extremely loath to fire head coaches. They just don't do it. I also wouldn't fire Mike Tomlin. They're bad this year because their franchise quarterback got hurt and now their backup got hurt. So I don't buy into that. If I'm guessing what Dan Snyder would do, he likes the big flashy things, right? In free agency, he likes the Albert Haynesworth and Adam Archuleta's and Antoine Randall-Els. My guess is he'll go for a big name. He'll try to make the grab at somebody like a young McVay who used to be in the building, and he'll probably pay a lot of money for it. But it's all going to come down to Dwayne Haskins. I don't care if it's Nick Saban, Vince Lombardi, Eric Taylor. Dwayne Haskins has to be able to play.
Yeah, and they've got to find out as well because – if he can't play, they got to move on. And with a new head coach, maybe a different head coach than this one, can you imagine a scenario where it might get worse in Washington? Is there one?
Well, listen, it could, sure. Listen, what would just happen with the Arizona Cardinals? They take Josh Rosen. He's the future. But, oh, my gosh, we fired our head coach, and there's this draft pick that we really like, and screw it. We're going to take him and get rid of him. So, sure, yeah, I mean – if they bring in somebody young, especially from college, and let's say Washington has the number one pick or the number two, and they say, you know, this Tua guy is incredible. That could be it. That could be it from Haskins, especially if they get one of these young offensive coaches. So then you'd be saying, well, did he play at all? Do we even know what we're getting out? Here's the point. 32 teams right now are in some tough trouble. We got all these backups guys. We got third strings, Gardner, Minshew's, and Kyle. And they're doing okay. Like, teams are treading water, maybe other than the Jets, but they're getting Darnold back now. There's one team out of 32 that is just chaos. The coach is gone. Is the quarterback staying? Who's calling the shots? If I had to rank all 32 in terms of stability versus chaos, Washington is in the 32 spot.
Right.
Hey, Cal, before I let you go, I got to tell you, you managed to stop for a couple of weeks now, stop our pre-show production meeting cold when the Angry Runs comes up on Tuesday mornings. That's the best couple of minutes of TV. Congratulate. I don't know where you get the energy and how you survive. You should just drop the mic and walk off the stage after you do Angry Runs. It doesn't get any better than that.
The pre-meeting stopped. One of these weeks, my heart is going to stop in the middle of the segment. People say, are you like that at home? I said, my wife can't get a word out of me. I'm falling asleep on the couch at 8:15 at night. It's because I dump it all on set. But I love that you guys love it. It's really cool. I love doing it.
Well, we'll look forward to next week's as well.
Thanks, Kyle.
Anytime, guys. See you soon.
Take care.
Kyle Brandt, NFL Network. You got to see it. He's a co-host of Good Morning Football. They got a great cast. We keep it on every day and on Tuesday mornings. And he had Dawson Knox. That got our attention a couple weeks ago.
Right.
But he highlights what he calls angry runs. And he goes crazy. Right on the set, he dances around, jumps around.
Yeah, Josh Allen on early and then he had Dawson Knox on, of course, again twice, and it was
it's great stuff,
good stuff.
We love talking to Kyle, and we thank you for being on the air with us today. We're gonna get back to our Twitter poll today. We want to hear from you. What do you think? Who's the best player on the Buffalo defense so far through five games? A lot of candidates, and we've got a Twitter poll up we will look at in a minute or two and then let you discuss. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. One Bills Live presented by Kalata Health, live from the Seneca Studio. Seneca Resorts and Casino, nothing comes close. Love having Kyle Brandt on the show. I do every Tuesday. You know why? It's great to work with like you, other broadcasters who bring energy, you know what I mean? And he's all energy. It's great.
Yeah, he's got great energy. He's got a real modern take on a lot of the stuff that he talks about, and it's fun to listen to. That you're right. That Angry Run thing is the best 5 minutes. That's a good show. We watch that show every day, and that is the best 5 minutes all week you'll get.
It's unbelievable.
It's really good. He's really
great.
Good.
It's great. And thanks to Kyle Brandt. Our Twitter poll today is a good one, we think, and we usually like them. This one I like a lot because of its simplicity, because we pared it down to the bare minimum here. What do you think? Five games. We know it's only five games. There's a long way to go. Nobody's writing a book about the Bills yet. But through the first five games, who's been the Bills' best defensive player? We ask that question because we think it's difficult to answer. It really is hard to identify one guy as the best defensive player on this roster through the first 5 weeks, but try. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Vote in the Twitter poll right now, almost 1,400 votes in the Twitter poll, and it's fairly close. Micah Hyde gets 44% of the respondents say he's the Bills' best defensive player. I cannot argue with that. Tremaine Edmonds gets 42%. That's tough to argue with as well. Tre'Davious White, only 6%. I'll argue with that. And 9% of somebody else in mind. Let's hear who else you have, or let's hear what you think. 803-0550. Phone lines open at toll-free as well, 1-888-550-2550. We got tweets on this, Steve.
Yeah, it's amazing, too. We got this Twitter poll. We got an elite defense. Right?
Without a star, without a big-name star.
And it's tough to pick it out.
Aaron Donald here. There's no Khalil Mack here.
Right. There's nobody who's knocking it out of the park statistically. And so you have to kind of – I thought it was a really good question, and we're getting, split between Micah and Tremaine. But from Coach Miller, he says, Edmonds' athleticism, anticipation, and length have him on the verge of being elite. That tipped pass he had on the Titans' last possession showed all of the above, plus his smarts. Edmonds is there. I mean, we get a lot of people who, from outside this area, we have guests on from across the country that say Edmonds is great, and he's getting better. It's a great spot to be in for a young player.
One on the tweet sheet, by the way, the tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. From Eric on the tweet sheet, says, hello, Western New York. You both agree defensive performance is a team effort. Picking out a player is not fair to the team. I could say Levi Wallace as he keeps up with his more famous teammates. Well, way to ruin our Twitter poll, Eric. You've done your best there. Picking out a player not fair to the team. Why not? There are no consequences here.
There's no rules.
There's
on
no
Twitter
rules.
Polls.
We make the rules on Twitter polls. I get you. I know
but
what you
true.
Mean.
But it's true.
And that's part of what we're saying here, difficult it is to identify the one best player, the one key player in the defense, is because it's a great team defense. And, by the way, you know the most important figure for the Buffalo Bills defense might be? Leslie Frazier, you know, for what he's done.
He's called great defenses.
We got to get him on the show, Jay Harris, producer. I know they're not around this week, but because I think, and I can look this up, but I'm too lazy. But I have a feeling the Bills, Leslie Frazier, has dialed up more pressures, dialed up more blitzes this year than he had the first 2 years. Don't you get that sense from five games?
They're
not a heavy blitz
know.
Team,
they're
but
not.
I think they blitz more than they did the previous 2 years.
I think one of the benefits they get from that, although it's tamed a little bit by the fact that you said they don't do it very often, that when they do, it's unexpected. He picks his spots really well. When the offense – And every defense does this. They try to do this. They watch an offense. They look at the front that the offense sees and then decipher what the offensive line rules are. If they line up like this and they drop back to pass and you rush them, this guy and this guy and this guy are going to do that. The offensive line are going to be here, right? So you try and put stunts in that hit that protection scheme where it hurts. Every team does it. It's part of the job of film guys who dissect and decipher what the rules of that offensive line are so that when you give them a look, you know what their assignments are going to be before the snap. And by doing so, you get some pressure. Leslie Frazier has dialed that up. When he calls pressure, he just calls his shots really well.
Yeah.
They do it really well. And for a lot of times, they're not a high blitz team, I don't think.
I don't think so, but it's more than the last two.
Right. And so they're getting solid, consistent pressure when they need it. And one of the reasons is because they got a really good back end of that defense. We struggle with this. You said it earlier in the show. We struggle with this Twitter poll, best Bills defender through five games. We were trying to go, what's the best Bills defensive position group through five games? And we thought, maybe it's the defensive backs, the linebackers, or defensive front. And we thought, just keep it simple. Mm-hmm. Who's the best guy? That's even harder.
It's hard.
Right? It's really hard.
Let's take a call on this issue, I believe. Bart on the line with us. Hello, Bart. Welcome to the show.
Hey.
Hi.
You know, I we talk about 10-win seasons and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not convinced yet. I want the Bills to be the best. But until we put somebody really away, I'm not convinced. We should have been able to put away anybody we played. Maybe save the Patriots. We dodged a bullet with the Titans, but we just haven't put anybody away.
What about the Giants? Giants?
Well, even the Giants, we let back into the game late.
They won by 14. The Bills scored the last in that game. They won by 14 points.
Bart, the Bills' defense held the Titans to 7 points. They held the Patriots' offense to 10 points, and that was on a short field where they were in field goal range already. They held the Jets to 16 points. They held the Giants to 14 points. I mean, what are you saying? Only if they allow 0 points, are you happy?
The offense, I'll grant you the Giants game. But we have to have an offense that can put away a team when they have the opportunity. The defense plays fantastic, and that's keeping us in the game and available to win everything. But we have not put away any team except the Giants.
Okay, now it's except the Giants. Okay, Bart, I hear you. And, you know, they are a great defense, and they played some good defenses too. And just quick analysis, they lost barely to the Patriots, number one defense in the league. They beat the Titans 14-7, got 14 points against the number nine defense in the NFL. The Jets are the number 12 defense in the NFL. My point is, yeah, they need to be better on offense. There's no question. And I'm sure that's the focus of attention for the coaching staff during this bye week. We got to generate more points.
And one of the things,
but they have been up against some pretty good defensive teams.
And they've moved the football. They're in the top 10, or is it top 12? The 12th?
Offense, 12th.
They're 12th in moving the football. They're moving the
points.
Football. The problem is they've had trouble putting it in the end zone. But this is an offense that has been productive and moved the football. Remember that in the 3-0 start, they didn't have a TD drive that was less than 70 yards on a 3-0 record. So they've moved the football and gotten a lot of first downs, and that's been a huge difference from a year ago. So I'm with you. There's no question they haven't put teams away, but maybe I'm wrong, Bart. You called in and said the team. I get it. We're talking about the defense, and if you're going to talk about the defense not holding up its end of the bargain or the fact that the team hasn't scored enough points to put teams away, that's one thing. But we've been talking about the defense and who the best defender is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I get it. We all know they need to score more points. As far as this defense goes, I think it's hard to ask them to do any more than they're doing, although they're asking it of themselves, no doubt.
Scoring, they average 18 points per game, scoring. They give up 14 points per game. You can win a lot giving up 14 points a game, and they've won four of their first five. You're going to need to do better than 18 points a game to make the playoffs, to continue to win, don't you think? You know, get up to 24 points a game.
Yeah, if you're going to be a really good team, you got to go 24 points plus. They need an extra touchdown. Forget the extra point, just two field goals to get to 24 points. If you do that, think about where this team would be if they would have scored six more points a game. Well, they would have tied the Patriots. So, they would have beaten that team. They could have beaten that team. This is a team that's really playing well, and certainly their defense is carrying them. But it's a nice place to be for this offense, for me, Murph, in that we always feel like, and I don't know if our listeners agree with this or not, but when I watch the Bills, there always seems to be a lot more under the hood offensively. And when Josh turns it over, it kind of hamstrings their ability to rev their engine. Am I right?
I agree with that.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's not like it was when we had Tyrod playing quarterback. It's like, God, you throw it. You know, where you just didn't feel like the offense was getting anything done because they just couldn't throw the football at all. This offense is not like that. I think this offense, it's just there, and they're striving to do more and more, going for the big play, using end-arounds, innovative play calling, misdirection. They're using speed on the field. Their running game and Frank Gore have been great. Their tight ends, they're getting contributions from all over. So I think this offense has a much better feel to it that at some point the lid could come off and they could hang 30 points on a team.
And they're playing without some key pieces, right? Devin Singletary's missed three games. They've got offensive line shuffle going on. We'll see how that plays itself out over the break, over the bye week here. But they are playing without some key pieces. And it, look, not these aren't excuses because they know it. They need to be better on offense. I think, as Steve says, they got a lot under the hood. They got to get everybody healthy, number one, including Singletary and Robert Foster, who I believe has something to add.
Tyler Croft.
Tyler Croft is still in the wings.
We don't even know what he does.
Right? And they got to stop the turnovers, right? I mean, the turnovers, first half turnovers against the Jets, they dodged a bullet there. They managed to come back and win. The turnovers all game against New England, they never overcame.
Right.
So dodge the turnovers, get healthy, and like Steve says, I think there's a lot more to come from the Buffalo offense. Ryan in North Carolina on the line wants to talk about the Buffalo defense. What do you have, Ryan?
Yeah, just a few observations. You know, first of all, you know, Ed Oliver got a lot of love in the preseason, you know, is, you know, making a lot of strides. Hasn't been a lot of talk about him lately, but I've been really impressed with, especially the game against Tennessee. There are at least two, maybe three plays where, there, you know, he made downfield tackles. I mean, 7 yards down the field. One was on a Derrick Henry run inside the 10-yard line when he was about to plow over one of our DBs, and he came and tackled him from behind. So, yeah, clearly, I mean, I think he's one of our standouts because he's a first-year player and he's been such a quick study.
I agree. And, Ryan, just want Ed Oliver's still learning to play, right? He's got a third of an NFL season under his belt, still learning.
Yep. Doesn't have the stats yet, but he's got the motor,
yeah,
the Kyle Williams motor, which I think is, you know, invaluable and going to serve him well for a long time. You know, also, obviously, you know, our safeties, Hyde and Poyer, I mean, match made and having it easy to go with them. Seems like we kind of turned the corner with this franchise when we got them on board a couple years ago. But I have to go with my defensive standout is Tremaine Edmonds. I mean, he's out there, you know, calling the defense. He's making the stops in the running game. He's back there with the long arms, knocking passes down, like we said, on that third down against Tennessee. He seems to be really stepping into that role. The one criticism I'd have with this defense, and maybe it goes to Edmonds, maybe it goes somewhere else, is our vulnerability against the screen pass. You know, Joe Mixon with the Bengals, you know, that was their biggest play of the game. You know, 35-yard screen pass when nobody was out there. He slipped out of the backfield. Same thing with the Tennessee game. I don't know who caught the screen pass, but went for 56 yards or whatever. So I don't know if that's on Tremaine.
That was the tight end, right? Wasn't it the Jonnu Smith, I think, the tight end screen? I think it was.
That went for 56, but whatever. I think that might be Edmonds' responsibility, someone slipping out of the backfield. We'll say on that particular play, if you look at it again, Trey White was on the edge, and the right tackle, you know, gave him a little hold. I know the league is trying to not call as many holding penalties, but if you watch that play closely, you know, White's kind of there in possible position to make the stop, and then, you know, their tackle grabs him, yanks him forward just a little bit, you know, kills his momentum, and then the play is off and running. So, you know, that's one thing I think we need to fix up. I'm always worried about the screen pass with this Bills defense. I think that's one of our biggest vulnerabilities. The one other thing I want to mention was I think a lot of our success this year has been the lack of pass interference calls against our defense. I mean, I can only recall maybe one, you know, penalty with Trey White against the Patriots after he twisted an ankle, and he was kind of, you know, a little, you know, gimpy out there, but we haven't had any of those big pass interference, 30-yard penalties that have killed us in the past. So I think that, and I think that's a tribute to our safeties in the back. Their DBs know that they're going to get help back there. So I think that's been a huge piece to our success. So,
a lot of good stuff there, Ryan. What do you think, Steve?
I agree with a lot of it. I haven't noticed a lot of penalties down the field, and those are really crusher penalties, and I think our defensive secondary is really playing extremely well. They're not giving up very many passes. They've been good against the run and the pass. They're doing a lot in the back end to help those guys up front. I think one of the things it showed last week in the fact that Marcus Mariota didn't have anybody to throw to, and I think if you're doing that, yeah, you are vulnerable. You can't take everything away, and I think I agree with him. There's been some times when they've gotten so, and I think this Tennessee game was one of those times when they got so focused up front on rushing the passer and getting Mariota on the ground, they do leave a guy like that open. One of the plays he talked about was when Tremaine Edmonds got locked up with an offensive lineman just as the pass was thrown. He saw it a half a second, not even a half, so 2/10 of a second too late, and it cost. And that was the big run down the sideline and the screen pass to Cincinnati. So he's right. They have been nicked a couple of times by those screen passes, but those come about because I think of the way their defense is playing in those other areas. So I'm with him. the caller, Ryan. I think he's right. I think you saw a lot of good things, and I think this defense is going to continue to get better. And I think it's that's the reason we asked this question today, who's the best defender through first five games. It's hard to put your finger on it. Certainly everybody's got a favorite, but man, oh man, you can point to a lot of guys and say they've been the guy.
Ryan, thanks. Good point. I just looked up the penalties. He makes a good point about defensive pass interference. The Bills have had one through five games. The league average is about 2.8, about three. The Bills, one of 8 teams with just one defensive pass interference. Cleveland and Jacksonville have no defensive pass interference penalties. Interesting. Good point. A break. We're back. It's One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, live from the Seneca Studio. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
One Bills Live, John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Time now for Reed's Milestones. Jordan Phillips recorded 3 sacks in the first half against the Titans. You know that. You saw that. His first multi-sack game for Jordan Phillips. And he's the first Buffalo Bill with 3 sacks in a game since Lorenzo Alexander did it a couple of years ago. October 9th, 2016 at the LA Rams. And Jordan Phillips is the first Buffalo Bills player with 3 in the first half of a game since Mario Williams did it in 2013 against Carolina. Jordan Phillips with today's Reed's Milestones, presented by Reed's Jewelers, the official jeweler of the Buffalo Bills. What a game. I hope there's more to come from Jordan Phillips. Do you think that's foolish to expect that, Steve? I hope for that?
No. We had somebody chiming in this morning. I saw that trying to get a hold of us on our through Twitter saying, they should probably extend Jordan Phillips while I, he has played well for him since they picked him up from Miami last year.
They signed him to a contract, didn't they?
I don't know how long his contract, what his contract situation is. I think he's in the, this might be the last year of his deal.
Are you sure?
But I'm not sure.
I thought the Bills got him on a new deal in the offseason.
Maybe they did.
Early. Remember we had him on the show.
Go to your handy dandy thing.
Go to Spot Track, man.
Go
on Mike Giannetti's website.
All right, do that, and you do it, and I won't. So it's a thought. Depending on where his contract is, he has certainly thrived in this culture. He certainly seems to be he's a first round talent. I mean, the guy's enormous. He also plays the exact position that Ed Oliver plays. And he's a different kind of player than Ed Oliver is. So a team really has to do their due diligence and do their prep for a guy, two different guys. Jordan Phillips is a big, massive, strong, high-motor guy. And, of course, Ed Oliver is smaller, much more athletic, and lightning fast. So that gives you two different kinds, completely different kinds of guys that play the three technique on your D-line that I think that's hard to prepare for. You know, I think it's really hard to prepare for. Plus, if you can stop one guy, if that's your, if you've got a guy that's good at that, stopping that, but he's not good at the other, well, guess who gets most of the snaps that week? The guy who he can't stop. You know, so I think it's a really good spot for the Bills to be in with Ed Oliver in the mix with Jordan Phillips.
Jordan Phillips looked it up on Mike Giannetti, SpotTrack.com. Jordan Phillips got the one-year deal, just signed last offseason, deal worth $4.5 million, $2 million signing bonus. $2 million guaranteed at signing, so he's free agent next year, unrestricted free agent. Good point. Maybe they should look into that at some point. Yeah. All right, we got a break. We're coming back with the third and final hour of the show, and let's hear more from you about the Buffalo defense. Who's played the best on the Buffalo defense for the first five games? Tough question, isn't it? We ask the tough questions here. We'll do more of that when we come back. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live from our Seneca studio in Orchard Park. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.